Hi, this is David Russell. Welcome to episode 26 of the No Bad Bosses podcast. Today's episode is sponsored by Dave's Charm School, which is the only soft skills training for IT service providers. And quite frankly, it works for anybody, any business, any nonprofit. The truth of the matter is your people don't show up, your employees with great soft skills. You have to train them. You got to hold them accountable to it. You got to walk them through it and then be there. So I'd encourage you, visit managetowin.com/charm school to learn more. My guest today is Kim Garish, who's the executive director of Michelle's Place in Temecula, California. That's a nonprofit that supports women who are going through breast cancer. I've worked with Kim a little bit. She is great. She's got some good tips for you. And let's dive in, see what she has to say. Okay, we're live. I'm here with Michelle Garish of Jeff, we're going to start that over so you can clip that. All right? Man.
You know, that happens to me every day, right, David? Every day for 14 years. Someone
Do you
does
really? Someone says, day. Hey, Michelle. Yeah. Okay. Yep. So maybe we leave it in, right? So anyway, This is Dave Russell here, and I'm here with Kim Garish, executive director of Michelle's Place. And Michelle, oh God.
That's awesome.
So Kim, I didn't explain it to you, but we are actually moving from Sisters, Oregon to back to Northern California in 4 days.
Wow.
And so that's why I look so tired and I cannot speak straight, is because every day I'm doing my job and then packing.
Right.
Until the wee hours of the morning. So anyway, this is Kim Garish, executive director of Michelle's Place. And Kim, can you give a little background on yourself and explain Michelle's Place? You guys do some incredible things, and I think our audience needs to learn about it.
Well, thanks. And thanks for having me. I'm the executive director of Michelle's Place. I have worked here 14 years. I was their first employee. And Michelle's Place has been around actually for about 16 years now. So I've been here pretty much from the beginning. I was hired as a marketing person, part-time outreach coordinator kind of a person. They didn't really know what they needed. Bill and Marilyn Watson, who founded Michelle's Place, were Michelle's parents. And, you know, in the wake of her journey going through breast cancer at a very young age, she was 23 when she was diagnosed with breast cancer. They just, they didn't know what they were doing. They knew they needed to start something. They knew that was her wish, was to make sure women didn't fight breast cancer alone. They opened to Michelle's Place. They were open for two years. They both worked full time. It was run by volunteers. And they realized that, you know, once the passion after someone passes away kind of wanes, they need to bring somebody in and do something to keep it going. So they hired somebody, me, this part-time person, to go out and talk about Michelle's Place and what they do. And, you know, as the story goes, they hired me part-time for the least amount of money I've ever been paid in my career. And what they really needed was a full-time person. But, you know, that's the nonprofit story, I think, is you get hired to do something and you're passionate about it. You get sucked in, and then what are you going to do? You're not going to leave them. So next thing you know, I'm working full-time, and it's been a labor of love. It's certainly, I'm passionate about the work we do and the services we provide. And 14 years later, we're providing hundreds of thousands of resources to women who are struggling with breast cancer. So not just women who are uninsured or underinsured or don't have access to resources, but just women who are fighting the fight and the battle. So I'm proud of the work that we've done. And there's still a lot to do. Like I say, we're not trying to cure cancer here at Michelle's Place. We're just helping the women who are fighting it today.
Yeah, and you're in Temecula, right? California?
We're in Temecula. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and do you still have the one location? I know you were toying with expansion at one point.
We still are just one location here in Temecula. If I've learned anything in the 14 years that I've been here is I'm not going to do anything unless I have the financial backing to do it. When I was young and dumb, or what do they say? Ignorance is bliss. you just go in and fighting for it and we're going to make this happen. Yeah, no, I'm not doing that anymore. If someone wants to open another Michelle's Place, it's going to cost some money, but the need is out there. We certainly, it's still in our long-term strategic plan, as you know, and hope to someday open another center if that's what we're able to do. We have some opportunities coming to expand our services. I don't know if it means an actual physical location, but just partnering with some other entities to do a little bit of what we do in other places. So,
and how big is that community then that you serve? How many people live in that area?
It's tough because for the most part, our geographic region that we serve is three counties. And, you know, those three counties are bigger than most states in the United States. So there's probably a good, maybe 5 million people in the area that we could potentially serve. Right now, we're helping about 70 new breast cancer patients a month. And they come from all different places. We expanded into San Diego County this last year into Fallbrook. And so that's a whole new territory for us. It's a little scary and daunting because it's a whole another county that we haven't served previously. Yeah. But there's a need.
And how many women are involved in your programs at any given time?
At any given time, it varies, obviously. Like I said, we have about 70 new clients per month. Right now, we're averaging about 5 services per person. So that means they come in for one thing to talk to the navigator. They'll come back for a wig. They'll come back for a support group. They'll come back for a class. So it's kind of the average-ish. Again, it varies. It just depends. Some clients need us more than others. But we're helping a lot of women, and it grows about 10% every year, the amount of services we provide.
And are there 700, am I remembering correct? It was about...
Yeah, there's about 643 women on our current list of women in various stages of breast cancer that we're helping on a regular basis.
Yeah, it's interesting. As you may recall, we adopted 4 young kids, and the oldest has incredibly thick hair, long hair, and she toys with the idea someday of donating the hair. And you mentioned the wigs, and I had forgotten about that.
Right.
But her hair would make a great wig, so
yeah,
I'll have to remind her that.
Places that'll do that, so that's a great idea.
Yeah, I thought it'd be a great journey to go through. You know?
Yeah.
It's not like the same though when you have a son that's becomes bald due to cancer treatment, and you shave your head in solidarity. If I shave my head because she gets her hair cut, it's probably not the same thing as a girl going through that.
No, not quite.
Not quite. So talk to me about leadership. I mean, you have this dynamic going where you mentioned you're dependent on volunteers. So you have, whether it's management of volunteers or you have volunteer leaders you have to deal with, and then you've got mentoring that taught you leadership. I mean, where do you want to dive in when you think of leadership and how it's helped you or been inspiring to you?
Right. All kinds of levels, I would say. In the nonprofit world, and again, I talk about being the first employee here. Well, I mean, I really had to look towards my board of directors, my volunteers that I had, and then my past work experience. And all of those things together certainly have provided me help along the way and skills and learning in leadership. I worked for a nonprofit organization before I came to Michelle's Place, but it was a different type. It was a 509. So it was a wine growers association. So we represented the growers of the wine country and then actual winery owners. And so it's a little bit different. We were doing something a little bit different. But the executive director there, she'd come from Catholic Charities. So she'd also worked in a 501c3. And so when I started working for Michelle's Place, I used some of the tools that she had watched her utilize at the Wine Growers Association, just in time management, how to deal with boards of directors, which nobody really gives you a whole lot of direction, especially when you just become an executive director. No one says, hey, you're going to need to train your board. You look to your board for leadership. You look to your board for direction. Well, when I started Michelle's Place, the family was the board. They had no idea what a board even meant, except for they knew they needed some people to make some decisions. And so we had to learn together. And I found through my mentor and through just learning through associations like the Association for Fundraising Professionals, where you can get some some education on that type of thing. And so I had to be the leader, and I didn't even really know it, you know, how to, I had to train a board, I had to train volunteers. And then you realize you also not only have to train them, you have to empower them and engage them for them to be leaders, because they're out there representing your organization. They're like your sales, you know, force, if you will, to get donations and cultivate donors and talk to groups about supporting the organization. So those are almost hard lessons to learn. I didn't just walk in and go, hey, I need to learn about this. It was like, oh crap, I need to learn about this because they're making mistakes and I don't know how to fix them. They're asking questions, I don't know the answers. And so it was a trial by air, a trial by fire, if you will, I think, in my leadership experience. Now, you know, 14 years later, we're kind of in the same boat. You bring on new board members that you don't, that don't know how to be board members or have never been board members, but I know there's a difference. I know how to train them and empower them and encourage them to be leaders of our organization, because there's no way we can run this place or any nonprofit organization, I don't think, unless you have leadership roles within the organization and not paid staff. You know, paid staff, you can, they have resumes, they have job descriptions, they have experience in leadership, and those are all things that you can decide whether or not they're going to be good leaders and put them in those roles. When you have a group of volunteers, you don't really know all of their backgrounds. They have applications and they have previous job experience, but when you're coming in as a volunteer, you're not coming in for a job. They're not getting paid. They can come and go as they please. And if they don't like the job or the role, they can bail. And so it's a whole different, a completely different set of skill.
Can you talk about, you know, some of the stories of working with volunteers, good or bad, and what you've learned from that?
Yeah. You know, obviously we work with a lot of breast cancer patients and clients. And one of our rules before you can volunteer is you have to be out of treatment for at least 1 year. And because we get a lot of gals who come in and they're just so grateful for the support they've received from us that they want to help, they want to give back. And so as soon as they feel well, they want to come in and volunteer in the center. Well, you know, we do so much direct service. It's not really healthy to have a newly recovering person work with newly diagnosed. For a lot of times, they don't even realize the emotional toll that their cancer took on them. And so they begin reliving their experience and it becomes very emotional for them. Well, you can't have an emotional person facilitating an emotional person. It doesn't work very well. So we have a couple of clients, and one of them actually, she started volunteering for us. She was a retired teacher, just started volunteering at the front desk, helping women, and she gets breast cancer 2 years into her volunteer term. And so of course she then turns into a client and she starts going through treatment, obviously, and getting support from us. I let her stay as a volunteer because she was handling it. And of course, checking in on her periodically. You know, the beautiful thing about Michelle's Place being its own place is I can make and break rules for the most part. We don't have hard, fast rules like a corporate company might. So I let her stay on, and she was really fabulous with the clients. She never really told them she was going through treatment. She just shared or listened, was a good active listener. And just encouraging her, because she had gone through the volunteer training. She knew what she needed to as a volunteer. And then as a patient, she then became even more empathetic, better active listener. Just excelled really because of her training as a volunteer and now as her experience as a breast cancer patient. It was amazing to watch the transformation, and I'm glad that she was able to stay as a volunteer, because she just from there took on all these other roles within Michelle's Place and actually became a board member of Michelle's Place. So she went from volunteer to patient to board member. And it was really just because, one, she was passionate initially, two, her experience, and then three, she wanted to do that much more because she saw what the needs were and she saw them from a different perspective. So that's just one of them. And that happens not often, but once in a while. And it's not someone I would have chosen as a board member when she was a volunteer, if that makes sense. She didn't stand out as a leader back when she was a volunteer.
Well, I think the thing that's interesting too, if we pause and replay the tape in our mind, is that, as you said, what you did was you kind of had a standard or a system for who should be a volunteer, who should not. And yet you were able to make an individual choice based on this person's behaviors and their actions and their skill set and knowledge. Yeah. You were able to break that rule in essence, but you kept the accountability in place. Right. So you didn't like break the rule and then let her run free. Right. And then, oops, you know, it didn't work out and you got a problem on your hands.
Right.
You really followed through on it. And for that reason, not only because you made a good choice, but because you followed through. Yeah. I think that was critical. Was that something you brought up your mentor several times? Mm-hmm. Is that something that your mentor has helped you learn through your experience there?
I think so. She was tough. Not everybody liked her, and not a lot of people still like her. And I get it. She's more of a hard, fast rules. You know, again, she comes from Catholic Charities, and I'm a recovering Catholic, so I can say this out loud. There's a lot that goes with that, right? There's Catholic guilt. There's rules. It's very, it's tradition oriented. There's not a lot of gray area. It's very black and white. And that's how she ran her nonprofit. And I appreciate that because there are some hard, fast rules that you have to have. But I don't think she was probably not my mentor in terms of I broke rules or I allowed something to happen. That's probably not where that came from, to be honest. But what she did teach me, when it goes back to the boards, because she taught me more about board members and personalities and just watching people. And that's where that came from for me. You know, again, it's all an individual basis. And you just have to, and it's something I'm still working on. When I'm in groups of volunteers and we have some new volunteers or new advisory board members, and, you know, we plug them in and we just watch them, just see what they do, see how their interactions are, how their communications are. And you have to be able to find potential and little tiny bits of it. It's not going to be big and extravagant every time. It's just little teeny tiny things that you notice. And I think as a leader, that's something I'd like to tell the girls or the staff is, you know, it's the little things. You got to watch the little things. It's not the big stuff. The big stuff, those people are going to be leaders on their own because they're big and audacious and they want to make a mark. To really find the leaders like our board member Ginger, who just did little things, who I could see the potential if I just fed her a little bit and a little bit of training, I think she's going to be amazing.
Go ahead.
I was just going to mention too, I think a big part of what's made me a good leader here is that being the first person, the first employee, I literally have done everything in this office, right? From had to clean our bathrooms ourselves to helping clients with prosthesis or facilitating a support group or answering the phone or, setting up for events and cleaning up for events. And I still do that. And I strongly believe in don't do anything or don't ask your volunteers to do anything you yourself wouldn't be willing to do. And I think a good leader does that. They don't just stand back and point and delegate. They actually get in there and do it with them. And especially in a nonprofit organization. I mean, we all have to work together all the time. But I just feel like that's been a really big part of this organization because we all have job titles and we all have job descriptions and we know what we have to do. But at the end, we know what has to be done and we all have to pitch in to do that. And I think that encourages and empowers volunteers too to want to be a part of an organization where, you know, that you don't know which one's the executive director because she's right in there stapling, you know, skirting on the stage with the rest of them. And I think that's a huge factor, no matter where you are, where you work or what organization it is, you know, get in there and work with them and get to know what it is they do. You know, even if you weren't brought in at that level, understand what they're doing and what the job looks like. And maybe you can see the changes that could be made or listen to them and their input. And I don't know. I still try to do that. Our whole staff, we have two shifts of volunteers. We have 65 volunteers that work with us on a regular basis. And there's two shifts a day. There's two volunteers per shift out in the front. And all the staff have to go up there each shift and at least visit, whether it's asking about their grandkid or the latest show. I don't know. But just to get to know each of the volunteers on just that little bit of level. Because you just never know what their potential is either. They could be that next big leader in our organization.
Yeah, and it strikes me, you talk about, you know, it's kind of over time, these little things. And when we had John Pearson and Mike Pate on, these are two guys that are experts on nonprofit boards. And they kind of went off on the nonprofit board side, which was fine. But one of the things that Pearson said was that, you know, he really recommends executive directors like yourself whenever possible to take 12 to 18 months to really vet a board member,
right?
Really get to know them and get past the any facades they may have up consciously or subconsciously, et cetera. Really get to know them in this, you know, that's really paid off. He uses that all the time. So that helped you, you know, with these people.
It does.
And then the concept of being on the front lines, you know, that's critical. I mean, I was just at a client last week and we were talking about, you know, employee engagement and that, you know, he had to set the standard and that type of thing. And it wasn't something he was announcing at a company meeting, but he said to me, I mentioned to him that one thing you can do to tell employee engagement is I said, you know, I came in the office after lunch today, I was driven in and there was a cup somebody had discarded right in the middle of the driveway. And I said, you know, that kind of bugged me. So I just picked it up and brought it in. And I said, I noticed in your, one thing you can do is you can put a cup out there and see how long it takes for an employee to pick it up. Or you, when you go into the bathroom, you know, is there hand towels on the floor type of thing?
Right.
And he said, he said, actually, I just changed the toilet roll in one of the bathrooms, you know. He's not announcing it at a company meeting, but, you know, he's willing to do whatever, kind of what you're saying, you know, and chip in. But then you can kind of tell when someone's engaged, whether volunteer or employee, are they doing those little things where they're leaving something better than how they found it type of thing?
Right. Exactly.
So how do you work with a volunteer leader? So the line volunteers, if we're going to use that term, you know, is one level, but then you've got somebody who's a team lead or someone who has stepped up and said, hey, I can manage these other volunteers, but you've kind of got this, I've got a commitment like they're an employee, but they're not an employee. And you know, do you have a story of someone who either you did that well or you didn't do that well and, you know, what happened and what you learned?
Right. We have a lot of those volunteers who are leaders. So we have chair people of our events, for instance. Now, but I'll tell you, so my program coordinator, she likes to be in control, and that's awesome because our events are amazing. She's not very good at delegating because she is worried that volunteer will just leave or not do the job because they don't feel any accountability. So you got to switch that around and say, well, how can we make sure they have accountability? And it's a hard balance because we're dealing with personalities. And again, we're volunteers. If they don't like it, they're out. But slow, and it's been difficult. It's really difficult to put something as big as your event, your largest fundraiser, in the hands of a volunteer that you know and love, but they're a volunteer at the end of the day. So it's been a struggle for us to do that, for her to engage someone like that. But it's also necessary because if you give that volunteer, we've learned, if you give that volunteer any kind of power, if you will, or you engage them enough where they have control, of course, they're that much more vested. And I think that's with everybody, right? It's with your kids. It's with staff. It's with anyone. I mean, then they feel a sense of belonging. They feel a sense of it's just part of something bigger that they have control over. And so we have an advisory board that, and they don't need voting rights or anything like that. They're more like an advisory committee, but they're our workhorses. They're the ones that we go to when we say, you know, we need wigs, or we're struggling with getting a contract at a hospital. Does anybody know anybody there? They all step up. They're business owners. They're very busy. They're CEOs. They all work in the community for the most part, in different industries all over. So they come to a meeting once a month for 1 hour and that's it. We try to be, we understand their time is precious. So what we've done with those people who are already leaders in their own industries is give them that. And say, okay, you're in charge of this event and we're here to support you. So you tell us what you need and we're here to help. Well, it's worked. We have three of those events, three different advisory board members who have stepped up and said, I want to do something. Two of them have succeeded. One hasn't. One is just letting it lie and they want someone else to do the work. So it's kind of a little bit of a test market for us because it is new for the control factor purposes. But the other part's good. I mean, we are purposely stepping back and not doing it when we know we can do it much more quickly, but we're letting them do it. And what's happening is they're inviting their people to come to the event. They're utilizing their vendors, their resources, because they don't want to use our resources. So it's been awesome because it's going to be successful, and it's going to be successful on a level not maybe as financially successful for Michelle's Place, but for the relationship and for future leadership and for future, you know, delegation of service and delegation of work. And so luckily my fundraising program coordinator is pleasantly surprised by the progress and is feels more confident giving work away or giving, you know, some projects away. So we're identifying those leaders and they're stepping up, and it's great because we don't have to worry about it. It's one of those things where, you know, they're doing a great job and they're checking in and it looks amazing and we don't have to worry.
So one of the things I find that leaders struggle with is the follow up and the follow through. Mm-hmm. And so in this volunteer situation, you have these three events and they're very important. So you do want them to have at least some level of success.
Right.
What type of follow through do you do to stay in touch with that volunteer leader who's taking it on? Right. To make certain, you know, it's staying on track and isn't totally going off the rails?
The easiest way is to give them deadlines. So in easy little deadlines, like we need to know by this date what exactly the details are, date, time, food, price, whatever that looks like, because we're going to have to do marketing. So we have to get all of this stuff to our communications gal by this date. And then, you know, she gave him a bunch of deadlines. If we're going to need this by this date, we're going to need this by this date. So she just gave him a bunch of dates, and Jamie would follow up. So it doesn't look like she's checking on them. She's, you know, and seriously, of the two that are doing it right now, they have come in before the deadline, knowing that the deadline was coming. And so that was easier because we don't want to bug you either. If you don't want to do it, that's okay. We get it. You need to just let us know. But they don't always want to let you know because they don't want to let you down, right? So by giving them these deadlines, we were able to manage that a little bit better. So it wasn't nagging them because she felt like she was going to nag them. So they're getting everything in. And when they can't get something, they're happy to call her. Because these are volunteers that have been with us for a long time. They're not new, so they're not afraid to call us and reach out to us. So it's actually been very successful so far.
But I really like to hear that because it validates what I teach my client. Is I teach them when you have an employee that struggles with deadlines, mm-hmm. the best thing to do is to break the elephant into bite-sized chunks.
Right.
You know, so you have smaller pieces, like you said, shorter deadlines.
Yeah.
And then you can manage the shorter deadlines so they don't fall so far behind they feel overwhelmed and stressed out, and then it's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, you know, those deadlines are actually early because if they didn't meet them, then we have 10 steps. So there's a little bit of a control freak factor, but
it works.
Yeah,
but it works. I mean, that's what you want. And mm-hmm. that's the reverse. You know, if you're the person setting the deadline for yourself, you pad it one direction. And if you're the person setting the deadline for somebody else, you pad it in the opposite direction.
Right.
Did you learn that from your Catholic
myself,
Charities mentor?
It's right on. Yeah.
Oh, is it? Yeah. So, you've got your board, and you're working with your board. How big is your board now?
12.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay, so that's big, and you still have the two family members on the board driving it?
Yep, okay. We do. Well, you know, in our bylaws, the family never has to leave. They can be on the board forever and ever. But what we have finally implemented, you'll be so excited to hear, is there'll be a change of the guard in the beginning of the year. So Marilyn will no longer be president after 17 years. So she'll be, we have an incoming president who's a community member who's been on our board for a couple of years now. And that will be huge. That will be actually huge. So, and it's time, you know, we're growing and we're changing. And Bill and Marilyn are amazing founders and great part of our operations. They're here all the time, huge supporters of what each of us is doing. And so, yeah. You know, she'll still be the face of Michelle's Place and going out and speaking, you know, to community groups like she does and representing Michelle's Place. But we need a bigger a push, you know, in the community, in the business community, and just different, you know, we're just going a different way. And when with growth, we need change, and change, we need growth. So moving forward.
No, I think that's great. And you need someone to come in and, as you say, push, but you've got the stability where you're still at the helm there,
right?
You know, with the operations side. So things aren't going to go crazy, but you always have that balance when you got somebody who founded it and there's a certain amount of their identity involved in the organization. And then you've got other people coming in who have some ideas and want to be helpful, but that can be challenging at times. So, So that's good. So as you're looking ahead, you know, I have to, and I'm sidelining a little bit off of leadership here or a lot, but one of the things when we worked together was it really struck me that you've got 600 plus women that are going through this difficult time, this journey. And so many things like this in society, we're so busy that we don't even think about it. We don't, you know, my brother went through leukemia for 13 years. And, you know, if you're not part of that, you don't even realize it's happening.
Right.
You know?
So true.
Yeah, we're just kind of going through our day. And if you're not doing any type of volunteer work, charity work type of thing where you're giving back,
right,
you don't pick up on people going through alcoholism or, you know, some type of addiction or a disease or even when you've got kids or even more difficult adults who have, you know, mental issues, you know, have limited capacity, whatever it might be. And I don't know whether you want to talk about somebody who's new to volunteering. You know, a lot of what drives your organization is people who have realized, hey, this is part of my calling. Right. I want to go help make an impact here. What about the newbies that come in and they're putting their toe in the water, or, you know, they're kind of looking for that meaningful work for themselves? You know, anything you want to share there as far as engaging people, evaluating people, that type of thing?
I think that's tough. I mean, it's probably the most difficult job in our entire organization is the volunteer coordinator. Yeah. Because, again, even though the volunteers, you know, and we talked about this when we worked together, is our volunteers filed a pretty extensive application now. And we do a much better job, I think, of evaluating the person. Where, you know, when we were new and it was just me, we would take any warm body who could be here because you just needed someone to be here and answer the phone.
Yeah.
Well, we've certainly grown up from that place, and not everybody's qualified to be a volunteer at Michelle's Place. And we have a great reputation in our community, and we do great work, and people think we do great work, and we need to keep that, you know, reputation intact. So we strongly believe not just everyone can be a volunteer here. But with that said, you get these qualified people who look amazing on paper, and they really want to do good. They've heard about us. They saw us at a health fair. I don't know anybody who has breast cancer, but I'd love to help in any way I can. I don't know what that looks like. And that's almost the hardest one to deal with, right? Because you're not really sure where to put them.
Yeah.
They don't have the time to come and work in the resource center and do direct service for you. They want to do health fairs or events, but that's not very highly supervised. And maybe, I don't know, how do they talk to the public? These are all things that are very difficult to assess in a one-time interview and in our training situation. So Michelle, who's our volunteer coordinator, she has to spend a lot of time with these people and really find, again, those little things, the little thing that they talk about that they're passionate about, whether it's their pets or their grandkids or, hey, I used to arrange flowers for 20 years when I owned a flower shop. Ding, 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 ding. Okay, that is something we're probably going to want to use in an event, right? And so to be able to pull that out and start talking more about that experience, maybe they hated it and they don't ever want to do something like that again. Okay, that's not going to work. But maybe it was something they loved, but they don't think it's valuable. We have to turn that around and go, there's so much value in that because we don't have that. You know, we pay for that right now. Maybe you can be that person for us. So just finding those little things again, I think, are so key. And you know, other volunteers we've had forever and ever. I mean, we literally have some volunteers. Our Wednesday morning volunteers have been here every single Wednesday morning for the last 16 years. Hmm. They've always worked together and they've always worked on Wednesday mornings. It's awesome. They hate doing any administrative work. They won't do it. They like to sit and chitter chatter. It's their social hour. But I'm telling you, when a client comes in, they are amazing with her. They know the history of Michelle's Place. They knew Michelle. I mean, they actually knew her. There's very few people who knew Michelle that work here. So they bring that amazing gift of history to the person, and they've dealt with so many people. They've heard all kinds of stories, so they're able to really do great active listening. And so we're not going to ask them to do events. We're not going to ask them to stuff envelopes or do any other administrative work. We're just going to let them be who they are. You're not going to teach old dogs new tricks, if you will. But I think that's just, it's such a hard job being a volunteer manager or coordinator, because you are just dealing with such a huge variety of people, personalities, experience, and finding the right fit for them, because they don't know where they fit, is a gift and a talent that's not easily found.
Well, I think it's great the way you explore what their interests are and try to match those up. With my clients now, I require them, well, require is too strong. I strongly advise them, don't hire anyone unless you do a test drive.
Yeah.
So whatever you want them to do, try to do some type of test drive, whether it's even training them on something and see whether they can apply what was trained, how quickly they can learn.
Right.
If they say they have a skill set, test it out, that type of thing. But matching it is so critical. And I think, although you're a nonprofit, obviously it's very heart driven.
Yeah.
But still in the work, we're trying to get where somebody, you're not hiring someone who's looking for a short-term job.
Right.
You want them at least to be looking for a long-term career. But if you've got them where they feel the job or it is a calling,
right.
Their role in your company is a calling, and that really applies with the nonprofits, then, you have the potential to knock it out of the park where it's a win-win all the way around. So that's great. So I know you squeezed us in on this podcast today, so I want to respect your time. Any closing thoughts, anything you want to say about Michelle's Place, or closing thoughts to leaders that you want to say? I really applaud what you're doing. I think it's awesome.
Thank you.
And I've known people who've gone through breast cancer. It's a trying time for them and their families. Yeah. And the fact that they can go to an organization, a group of people, supporters like Michelle's Place, and just be able to share their, the deepest thoughts and where they're at and get that support is awesome.
I appreciate that. And thanks for your time. I've enjoyed it very much. But in closing, I would just say for leaders, something that I look back on and I appreciate, I stumbled into was, again, some sort of leadership training, whether it's books, webinars, an association of some sort, whatever you're involved in, just continuing education is key. And it's important still for me today, because our world is always changing, obviously, and how we do business is always changing. So I still, and my staff, it's important, and my board supports this, that they get continuing education. So I don't think we'll ever know everything. And so I value that. And I'm glad that I was able to do that, that someone pushed me into, hey, take a couple classes on board stewardship or leadership or retention and volunteer management and just whatever your industry is. I would just highly suggest that, or consultant too. You can always have someone come in and help you, like you helped us. But I just think there's always learning to do, so I would highly recommend that to anybody in any level of leadership. And then Michelle's Place, again, like you said, we're here for people who are going through breast cancer, regardless of where you live. If you can't get to the center, we have 5 patient navigators. There's always 2 of them here, one that speaks Spanish and one English, obviously. So if anyone's ever struggling with breast cancer, wherever you are, feel free to call or visit us at michellesplace.org and check out what we do. Send an email, whatever we can do, we'd love to help.
That's really cool. You got me choking up at the end of the podcast here, but thank you so much, Kim, for joining me and joining our audience here. I want to thank you. I encourage you guys. What is your website address? Is it michellesplace.org?
Yep, that's it.
Yep, michellesplace.org. So check it out, what they're doing. And I look forward to when I see you next. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much.
Okay. Thanks everyone for listening. I always enjoy catching up with Kim at Michelle's Place. I'm sure you got some good tips there, and I do encourage you to check out their website. They do some really cool stuff, michellesplace.org. My guest next week is Jillian Pham. Now, Jillian is a senior consultant on our team. She worked with us in the past. We're considering doing some new projects together. And she is really awesome. And she's got some opinions, very strong opinions, about leadership and management of finances and really being a good leader. She is awesome. And I think you're going to get some good tips. Don't miss it. I'll see you there.